Muy buenas tardes. Muy buenas tardes. Vamos a sentarnos y ponernos bien como buenos alumnos, buenos participantes. Me da mucho
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome you in the name of the University of Sucre. Associate Director of the Center here that is sponsoring this conference. Thank you very much for your attendance. In this session, we have some very important people present, like always, but even more important here, who are here with us. I hope you have a sheet that has their bio. I'm not going to repeat much of it because we want more time, first of all, for these very important people. But I would like to welcome Alejandro Ordóñez Maldonado, the Colombia's General Attorney, and Mario Alfredo Pinal Rosales, a member of the National Congress of the Republic of Honduras,
and
also José Ricardo López Pescador, former congressman, director of the National Trust Fund for Communal Land for the Government of Mexico, and then also María Arisa Velasco, fourth deputy attorney before the Council of State for the Attorney General's Office of the Republic of Colombia. Thank you very much for being here. We're going to begin, and just to make sure they have time for everyone, then at the end of all of the presentations, we will go ahead and have some question and answer session. Thank you very much for your attention and for your attendance. Good afternoon. The title that was suggested to me, Religion and Public Life, brings us to the history of political and religious power between the church and the state, something that for some takes care in unity and for others in a separate way. At the end of the 19th century and toward the middle of the 20th century, those who were in favor of separation, or rather separation of the state, they considered this a symbol independence of the temporal realities. But nowadays, it is a confrontation. But now it is not about a confrontation between the state and the church, or between state and religion. When there are two ways of understanding freedom, modernity considers it as such when sovereignty is exercised. In other words, freedom without any limitations at all, simply as the absence of coercion or the absence of rules. It's about being separate, isolation between the two branches, and this is something that led to today, laicism is not understood as the way it was considered in previous centuries. Currently, the natural order of truth is denied, and relativism is considered the fundamental part of secularism, which is all form of morality, which is considered as part of and the natural sense of things, in other words, of their totality for all forms of authority. And therefore, religion would be a great obstacle when it undermines the rights of the citizens would otherwise not easily be emancipated by the evangelizers of this nature of lay religions as they try to institute the contemporary legal systems. And that was why Chesterton rejected this outlook at the middle of the previous century when he stated that what is logic in a lay state can believe in any religion but never practice it. In Europe, historically recognized as the center of Christianity, there is now an insistence on denying religion and its extensive history. For an example, there is the attack against the regional institutions, which has entered the Constitution of Hungary. And beyond the details of the new Constitution, the irritation of the anti-Christian institutions have been going by the phrase, God save Hungary. Well, this is now a matter of censorship. Public institutions are prohibited from recognizing God as a creator of all life. And this rejection of Christian references is not limited to official texts, as was also the case in the writing of the European Constitution. It also extends to public discourse and government officials are prohibited from mentioning religion and those who are campaigning to become government officials. But this debate is of a different facet, including those who are non-believers. For instance, the philosopher Jürgen Adelmas, who states that his agnosticism recognizes that religion may play a favorable role in society, but he asks that in public discourse, the religious language be translated into a secular language, a language that is accessible to those who do not profess any religion or divine belief. And this author of the so-called communicative authority, they will be, in other words, neither their language nor their principles will be existing in public life. And this has to do with the thesis of Paulo Flores da Cais, a recognized Italian atheist. And he states that with respect to the believer, that believers don't know how to dialogue reasonably, and that they should resign their positions. In other words, that believers need to forget about God if they want to participate in social political life. Laicism in Latin American countries is becoming a pseudo-state religion that obligates or forces all citizens and pushes their religion into the farthest away corners. And it proposes the protection of citizen as opposed to the protection of the state. But now they try to protect the society as opposed to religion, as if religion were a structuring force of society, in something that has reflected in the exclusion of those people, among those who cannot access certain political posts, and which are accessible only to those who leave their religious beliefs. It's a type of public threat and a source of violence and discrimination. You may recase the call of Rocco Buttiglione, an Italian politician who in 2004 was named as Commissioner for Security in the European Union, and he had there was strong secular opposition to his nomination, the discrimination campaign against the candidate because of his beliefs was successful, and the evidence that was submitted against him consisted of a declaration in which Buglione said that sexual relations between people of the same sex were against natural order, just like the doctrine of the Church describes. But Europe says that sin lies in affirming one's own religious beliefs. So according to the so-called anti-discrimination laws, in many cases, protecting life, natural marriage between a man and a woman, and even can be considered. There are many parents whose children go to school and are told that abortion is a fundamental right, and this type of secularism in Europe had reached the point of Christian phobia, something that is, and there is a Jewish constitutionalist who recognizes that Europe is starting the path of persecution against those who are religious. No longer is it a matter of killing people in the Roman Colosseum or persecuting them violently, as in non-Western countries. There's a very well-known statistic. More than many Christians die because they're Christians, and it's about a subtle law against anti-discrimination laws that suppress the rights of religion, freedom of parents to raise their children and educate their children is in danger in terms of how to teach sexual morality to their children. And it is, however, not everything is lost in Europe. Last year, Maltés Donivor, a Catholic politician in Europe, had to go through a similar campaign, but this time those who were against him were the ones who lost the battle. However, secularism also extends to Latin America, and I am, as the Attorney General of my country, in promoting fundamental rights in my country, I have constantly been attacked by secularists who claim that I base my decision on my religious beliefs, even though those decisions have always been made in the General Attorney's Office, strictly in accordance with the Constitution. And my decisions have always been made in accordance with a secular language and not a religious or biblical or other types of religious language. Why, then, have I been victim of this type of bullying? Well, the whole country knows that I'm a man of faith, and faith enlightens the course of my life, and I have never had a shameful conduct with regard to my religious belief as a Catholic. The fact that I have not resigned has a very high cost because the attacks are incessant and the mocking ever more disrespectful. But I shall continue in my pursuit of defending the rights of the citizens and the constitution of my country, and I shall never abandon my faith. But Buglione said that because he's a man who lives his religious beliefs and does not hide them, and they are unaware of the role that the Catholic religion has had in the defense of human dignity. Throughout the world, Christian-inspired decisions have defended the dignity of each human being. And this is why we can ask ourselves that was made with regard to the American Gerard Willer in a visit to the French capital after he observed the traditional church in Paris, and also the defense. And he asked himself, what kind of society can guarantee better guarantee the fundamental rights of people? The society of the cathedral or another society? Perhaps I will not convince secularists of my position. Perhaps it will not be easy to convince them. However, there's a great work ahead of us to stop this anti-religious incentive so that we can, in future generations, can be established on firm foundations. And in the creation of our culture, we need to emphasize the noble values: solidarity, love for the truth, love for the family, respect for justice, faithfulness, trust, marriage, and human dignity. The bitter fruits of secularism are before us, and those who are victims are the weakest in society, the elderly, children. Some fruits of secularism is the destruction of family, abortion, euthanasia, and also its redefinition that tries to include another type of union that is not the basis of society, which is the case of the so-called homosexual marriage. And its fruits is also notable in the distortion of values that leads many young people to depression. And this is why true Christian values are important in social life, and it'll be essential for the future if we want to live together in accordance with our legal and political systems. And this last part is essential. It has to be based. They need to be. We cannot guarantee a defense for people, and also we cannot guarantee the defense in the political system. What looks good today can be bad tomorrow, and what we defend today will be censored tomorrow by a different court. And this is something that goes against universal values and what is unrecognizable, and something that used to be a singular concept for all of a sudden, the law becomes a pragmatic issue and something that is not useful for most or not even the majority. And I've reached the end. And one last reflection. I was concerned when I heard the judges a year ago. I was a judge. I am a career judge. I was a judge for 20 years before I became Attorney General. And now, as I listen carefully to these judges and with all the due respect, that cannot be the mentality of a judge just because they're in the law. It's not just a matter of applying the law just because they work with the law. And that was what allowed National Socialism to become what it became. A judge cannot just be the silent words of the law. We have to remember Saint Tomayo. I was raised a Catholic and also know about the law. A law that is not just is not a law. It is just an instrument of violence, an instrument of social control, but that shall not be law. If we have this mentality and assume the judicial function or as public officials and civil servants, we can't just assume a public position, but we too must have a conscience. And we can become conscientious objectors when there is a legal decision, a judicial decision that affects our conscience, and that is conscientious objector, and that's why that's why we have to resist those decisions that go against the laws of God. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, my dear friends. I say friends because in just 2 days I know a lot of people. Rafael, Estadías, Julio, Moisés, Paola, so many. I am so happy to be here. Thank you for this invitation. More than I applaud for these minutes to share a few ideas, I would like to ask for an applause for BYU for this invitation and for this initiative. Applaud for you. I am from Honduras. And for those who are here in reference, we are in Central America. It's a country of extraordinary people, people who like to serve, people, and you are welcome, very welcome when you like to stop there. It's a country of 8.5 or Hondurans. We have been talking about human rights, the freedom of religion, and human rights. I would like to share a couple of ideas of what we have been doing as representatives in the National Congress of Honduras and generally in the government, but generally with the society. We're not different. We have to work as a team, and that's what we have been doing in our country. We have been doing great reforms in topics of religion and human rights. We are three different, the legislative power, the judicial power, and the executive power, independent but complementary. And after the socio-political problems which we have had in the country, which I assume 2009 was a year which made us learn the type of the political class we have to change. We have to change concerning these topics, not only these topics, but all the topics, and to work with our society. We have made changes. The political class has changed. I remember that this country was, we didn't participate in any other organization on any other country. And even those that are close to Honduras, and following this line of thought, Honduras emphasizes the respect to human rights, especially the framework, legal framework, which is regulated by the Convention of the Treaty of San Jose, the Constitution of the Republic, and many other laws which are complementary to each other. We have a system of protection, national, of human rights, which is followed by the Supreme Court and also by the Commission of Human Rights, with the problem that we had to be isolated in 2 years, thanks to God. The work that we did, we were able to recover our relations with 112 countries. My skin shivers as I remember this, because we started having this relationship with those problems. As a result of these changes, we continue with the steps in relation to what we are mentioning here. For example, we have a Ministry of Human Rights. Before, it was only a Commission of Human Rights. We gave that step to a Secretary of State, as you call it, a secretary for the indigenous peoples, because they can be excluded. We have to defend them and work for them and help them, some of them, for recommendations of the Commission of the Truth, and to be there with the other nations and the political will, which is what others were mentioning this morning. It has to be the political will and our frame of thought that we can be changing and get together and look for those spaces, as we do with Julio Alvarado and Tim Johnson from Guatemala. They have gotten closer to Honduras, and we are working closely with their churches and their organizations. We continue working. And in Honduras also, we have another step, and is constituted a Ministry of Religion and Faith. And there is a minister for this, to open the arms and the doors to each one of the denominations, not only the Catholic Church, not only the evangelicals, not only the Latter-day Saints, but all the churches. And at the end, we are under all the whole, the same God, in each one with their doctrines. We respect it, but for working better, because it's really what helps our society. We are developing in that way. Carlos Portillo Elias, who was the minister that we had, is now one that had to leave, and now slowly we are in a month from the next elections in our country, and we're going to, we hope that we will continue as we have developed this from since 2009, and that we will continue developing all the human rights in this ministry, for example, of religion and belief. This is extraordinary. All this is with the executive, but working with the National Congress, it is important to me. Before, it was unthinkable that a Republic Congress, before starting this meeting, that they would pray to God. And they would have that time, and before we make the laws, and now we have a priest, and now we have a pastor of the Christian church, and we they have a calendar, and they open the door part to have participation from the different denominations and the participation of Congress of any public act and the executive as well. So working in a coordinating manner in a framework of religion in the National Congress, but we didn't have a balance. It was leaning towards different denominations, and it had to stop in the Congress and the president to be able to socialize in the 18 departments of Honduras and to have in that way a balance and equilibrium so that we can coincide to working as a team with the government. And at the end, what we can separate are each one of different denominations. I am happy personally that we have progress in Honduras. As we told you about prayers, recently we approved in the Congress, for example, to have Christians from this country welcome, and I thank them. And they presented the National Congress to be able to make a prayer for Honduras, and it was approved in the National Congress in each department at the same time in its different localities. We were able to have a Christian event and to bring all others and denominations, and that we would all pray for the path of our country. But the National Congress approved it. It's now the law. And we believe that in this sense is steps in opening up of liberty of religion. In other examples, for example, of the advances we have been developing in the levels of security, which have been, we have been having prevention, helping the youth, which is the 70% of our country, and in a security that we have, and to give resources from the private life in each department in Honduras to have the different classrooms and places for the youth to play, and where the law for the incentive to sport. I was an ex-athlete in my life, 30 years behind, of course, but the law of incentive to sport, it has in all the different departments or states, so that if they cannot have a scholarship, they have participation in there on the churches that are part of that community. We're talking about education, government, country, and the opening to our churches, of which whatever the denomination. For all those things, I am very pleased. I'm hoping, I ask God that in a month when we have our elections, that we will continue in that path, because really only with faith, with tolerance, with consensus, we can have a country as Honduras to go forth. I see better times for Honduras. I don't want to take too much time from you, from the questions you might have, so that I can respond to some concerns you might have. This is what I wanted to share with you, or what we are doing in this country. For me, it's a privilege, it's an honor. And I'd like to tell you that in your countries, including each one of you, have your different styles. There's a new generation in different countries that we are changing. And if we knock on the door, and I see someone says, somebody here somebody who was asking our friend Colombian that if we insist and if we can work in the political class and with the different religious denominations. So thank you very, very much. It's my pleasure to be here.
Uno, dos, tres. Pues, sí, sí, prende la presentación. Muchas gracias. Yo vengo de México.
I come from Mexico, and I would like to share with you this dinner with Alejandro from Colombia. Now we know why he is the Attorney General. Extraordinary presentation, Attorney General. I know we know why Mario Alfredo is in the political body, and that he was in sports, and I'm sure he had a great body then, and with the lady from Colombia. I come here invited from the university, and for my friend Luis Gallego, who is here, who was who has a role with the church in Mexico, and I had the luck to be general attorney in the Mexican Congress. What did I do when I was federal in something that in 100 years, it seemed impossible when we presented the freedom of religion, especially being a member of the party of revolutionary institutional, especially where they have the more critical and liberal, difficult liberals and anti-religious. To say that, in fact, it was the greatest opposition that we had is to, for this to be converted into. It was for me the most important part, and I'm going to talk quickly in what this reform consists. Is helping some basic concepts that you all know, the historical context, the proposal, and what was the process of approval. First, the context. You know that a lay state is a good political state that we don't have, that the people have to profess what is the same to treat all the religions, to live together in peace and a tolerance. But the freedom of religion is a concept that we talk a lot, but it's important to mention it in our constitutional norms to have a real exercise of each human being. What aspect do we have in religious, the freedom of conscience to profess a belief, the freedom of religion, the public or private actions, and those things that we believe that is sacred, and the liberty of manifestation of religious convictions. But the three aspects together, not one, but three, is a true religious freedom. The religious freedom is first to choose, and later is to practice it, to have the disposition to practice that liberty, not only to profess it, not only to have it, but to practice it, the diffusion of the same, those who believe the same religion, and finally, our way of life and our way to look at the world. The historical context in Mexico, as almost all countries in Latin America, the Catholic Church had a tremendous influence in the government in this 16th century and 19th century. They would take care of the civil life. What happened in 1967 with the reform, the laws of reformation in the 19th century, it's taken of the property of the church, and the civil aspects came in with the government. The same in 1917, which is at the beginning of the 20th century, is established the freedom of religion, and then comes what we were telling the Attorney General, the war of Christians, when it is a clash between the government and the church, and it comes a huge armed conflict, and then it comes a constitutional reform in 1992, which is the this is historical context is what Mexico has lived. The constitutional environment, the 24th article, which is still a few months, establishes the liberty to practice of religious beliefs, and later on the relationship between the religious and the state. These reforms that comes, I reiterate, since the Constitution of 17 comes the law of being able, which the friend from Madrid has established, where we have certain rights to manifest the ideas of religious and the restrictions of the public acts of the mass media. Finally, it's a secondary law. What happens in Mexico? Mexico, like other countries, has treaty and international treaties. In those, they have conventions in the subject of human rights, and they have their treaty, and they make it part of their law. But as far as the religious liberty in international laws for civil rights, the Declaration for Human Rights, it has been generated with different conflicts and which were not seen in the national context. What happens is in this treatise for Mexico, the liberty to believe in a religion. The expression in public or private, individual or collectively of that religion, the practice of those and the teachings of that religion, and we have things, positive things, that the religious liberty is only subject to limitations given by the law to protect the security, the order, and the health, and the moral public, and it will be respected, the right of the parents that they will choose, that they will receive the religious education that they would like. And the state must guarantee the exercise. The state should not overlook and should not oppress the free exercise of religion from the state. They should have no influence whatsoever. That was the international framework. But what happened with the jurisprudence in Mexico, in the Constitution and the law of religious affairs, they bring different obstacles to be able to practice that freedom of religion. First of all, they have the permission to have any celebration outside of their churches. Later, we have to different and to be able to do any, and in mass media, they have to have a permission, and they have the article on 124 of our Constitution established that point attention to profess the religious that one wanted the most and to practice the ceremonies or the acts always that they wouldn't have a. It only spoke to profess the freedom of belief, but not the freedom of religion. What was established in the Article 24, it only warranted the belief, the guarantee of belief. It was not explicit in the liberty to practice the religion, since it was reduced to acts of private act. So we have analyzed the international context that Mexico had and the constitutional order. We have that the international norms compared to the national laws to see that both religions had the celebration of beliefs without the coercion for the freedom of religion. It was also in different legislation. The freedom of religion has to, with the laws, to protect the order, the health, and the moral public. But the respect for parents, for their children to receive the educational religious, it was not established in the Constitution or the expression in the collective or individual or the expression private of the religion. That is why we proposed a constitutional reform to harmonize the constitutional form to the contents of the treaties, international treaties. We have the contents with base on of the secularism and the freedom of religion, to allow the open exercise, to allow the exercise public and private, individually or collectively, to allow the mass media the acts of religious practices without the permission of the government, and be able for parents to have the freedom of parents to teach their children in whatever their beliefs were. This is why we made the proposal. You see the text that we had to, wanted to change, and the one in the present. As a member of Congress, I presented this. All individual has the right to have freedom of conscience and to adopt whatever it pleases him. This freedom allows him to practice in public or private the ceremonies and worships, as long as it is not a breaking of the law. No one will be stopping that liberty because of political desires or political propaganda. And also in the third article of the Mexican Constitution, of the education has to be lay, free, and given by the state. That the state is going to respect the liberty of the parents and or the those who are responsible for the children, that they will receive the moral and religious education that will goes in accordance with their personal convictions. This reform was a recognition of the treaty with international treaties with liberty of religion, and to have we not have coercive ways to manifest religion encompasses the individual help that is not something different. The practice or the teachings.
That's just a criteria to establish the limits that religion should establish. Which was the process that came after the Reformation? The original House was the House of Representatives, which has 500 representatives. There are three big strengths, three main parties, the PRI, the PAN, and other political parties. It's all divided into thirds. And religious freedom had been discussed by members of the National Action Party during previous legislatures, but nothing happened because the National Action Party is a conservative party that is very close to the positions of religion, and hence a proposal from someone from that political party would not go very far. Which was the subject that a member of the Institutional Revolutionary Party suggested, the one I'm suggesting, and which went against the proposal of those who were from the Institutional Revolutionary Party. Back then, there were 230 of us out of 500, and so the big opposition was among our fellow representatives who did not think that the Reformation was necessary, that the previous version of the Constitution included religious freedom, and also because this was part of our legal system, because Mexico had signed the human rights. However, this gave an important step forward in terms of the Constitution, and this was a very hard work going against the current. And then in 2011, with 199 votes in favor, in other words, the two-thirds that are required under the Constitution. So finally, after a large debate, the only session where the Congress was only with 251, they formed a quorum in order to be able to make their acts valid, the legal quorum. And that night, we finished with only 260 representatives. Many from my party, the PRI, went outside to go to the bathroom, to get a drink, or to do nothing. But from the National Action Party, there are many who were absent. And from the ones from the left, there was hardly anyone. And so with a little bit of compromise, the vote was made, and we went ahead with 199 votes. And then it went to the Senate. The Senate has 198 senators, likewise also divided into three political forces. But since the House of Representatives had already approved it, it was also approved in the Senate, not by absolute majority, but by just barely a majority that would allow it to move forward. And so the Constitution states that the 31 states of the country must give a favorable opinion. So out of the first nine Congress Senates that voted, there are five against and four in favor, something that had never happened to a constitutional amendment in Mexico when the House of Representatives and the Senate, all they do is the states just validate it, because those are the same political forces at the local level. So if I'm a local legislator and my senator from the PRI party voted in favor, then as a local representative, I just support it. But that didn't happen this time. There are five votes against and four in favor. And so finally, we had to use a different strategy to obtain the 17. So far, we only have 17. The other Senates did not want to express themselves, but it is enough for the constitutional reformation to pass. And so the current president on July 19, 2013, he enacted this law this year. And so this constitutional reform, all people are entitled to freedom of ethnic beliefs, something that had to be negotiated with some of the leftist senators, because without them, this bill would not have passed. We all know that congressional negotiations are not the same initiatives as the initiatives are not the same when they're approved as when they were first presented. Imagine the leftist party, the PRD, that was against anything religious. And finally, we found 20 senators that we could talk to and negotiate with so that they can vote in favor. And so in exchange, they asked for everyone to be, for the text to read that everyone was entitled to their own ethical beliefs. So this freedom includes the freedom to practice individually or collectively, both publicly and in private, the various ceremonies or acts of one's belief, insofar as such is not prohibited by law, and it cannot be done for political reasons or for political propaganda. And religious acts of public worship is something that we could not eliminate. Otherwise, our bill would be worthless. So these acts would include church buildings and acts that are held outside of them. So in Mexico, we made an important step last year in terms of religious freedom. It was a difficult reform and complicated, and one that was under a heavy attack by the media. In Mexico, like in the rest of Latin America, we have certain taboos because of the history they had, especially with regard to the relationship between the Catholic Church and the Mexican state. However, just for having promoted this initiative, just having seen it within the context of the Constitution and having promoted these types of political policies is something that fills me with satisfaction. I come here to tell you that when you want to do something, you can do it. There will always be obstacles, but when there's conviction, and above all, I am very grateful to have heard the this conviction that the Attorney General of Colombia has that he showed us this morning to tell you that in Mexico, a senator from a party where there was a big debate on this matter, we were able to move this reform forward on the constitutional levels. And then there will also be a religious freedom law that we're working on. There's several Mexicans here, Efren, Paola, Luis, and also attorney over there. We're working on this matter, and in Mexico, we will continue moving forward in this area. Thank you very much.
Buenas tardes.
Good afternoon. Colombia has open decision, and we get to close it. Thank you, BYU, for that's why I'm dressing blue in honor to the university. Also, my party in Colombia, which is equal to the blue color. As you know, I'm a delegate, and we have been presented. Now, in this particular context, we have been talked about the human rights. We know where the declaration came out as a response to World War II, as a response at everything that was debated in the trial, and there's been a catalog in that Dr. Lopez and also Dr. Pineda, they make a relationship to that, not in the universal human rights, but also in those particular treaties and also in the American Convention of Human Rights. But in this particular year that I'm finishing my mastery, my doctorate in human rights defense, among the trials and everything else, they gave me the particular duty to actually follow up on certain particular guidelines and finally to figure out how often they are being applied and how often they are being followed in the full guideline that is part of the universal guideline for human rights. To me, I believe that they have become dead, because in the case that the freedom of religion and liberty and conscience and thoughts and to exercise the liberty of freedom, the liberty of speech, and he believed that religion has become only exclusively to the private exercise of it. It seems to be like Europe. It seems to be that where the liberty was born when it was pre-colonized in France, in the true France, it is prohibited to exercise the liberty of religion. It is prohibited to use the habits, the customs, Muslims. It is prohibited of the religious symbols. And also, until when or until how far are we going to get with this particular fact and reality? So that's why the function of the liberty within the system of the right to the liberty. The anthropologists, the psychologists, and socialists in today's day, they do believe that the violence is just not the physics. It is not just those that are shedding blood. There's even more, which is the psychologists, which are causing more and more problems, and they are breaking everything that goes within the law. And this is where I want to warn you. In the Western area, we are ashamed that even up to this day, there's Christians that are shedding blood. in the Oriental area or the Oriental part, or they, that they have been judged and they have to be migrating from country to country. But in some other parts in the world, there are some other calamities that are happening, especially the emotional violence and the psychological emotional problems. All of this I could scan, I could read from the messages that daily, all the particular bulletin boards will come to my email. I'm going to say it in Spanish. It comes headlines, laotic, and this particular duty I took upon myself, and I did some research in order to find some particular things. One of the things on one of the violins is basically to be looking at those people that are believers. My boss mentioned this, but everything that he had suffered in Colombia because of his religious convictions, they give some room in some place to pretty much to build up a series that can gather much attention from the public, that they have a whale of criticism when they think. Now, one of the thoughts that they have about religion when it comes to exercising the liberty of human rights is to make fun of all those things that are full of reputation for the believers. It doesn't matter from what religion, or it doesn't matter what kind of thoughts or convictions they might have. One example would be, it will be in literature, in art, in sculptures, the satanic verses from Salman Rushdie. It develops a lot of violence. The other case is the sculpture that makes fun of Christ in 2010, which is from Asturias in Gijón in Spain. Now, this is denominated from this particular person that supposedly they let the anger go in those youth in Guadalajara, Mexico, because they were making fun of those national symbols, which is the Virgin of Guadalupe. So also, we talk about art, sculpture of art, which is the Last Supper from Leonardo da Vinci. So they're making this picture look, all these people being naked and not just making so much fun of who made this, but the content that it has and how much fun they were making on those particular individuals. And here, not even the artists, the media, they cannot even mention the consequences socially due to the fact that they don't know with the right conscience what can become in the future and what can be a consequences due to these attitudes. But it doesn't just worry me, those particular things, because in reality, the liberty of religion and to practice it, I think it's just here in Utah. It's here. It's happening here. Contracting that particular right or liberty is becoming vulnerable in another part, which is the Western part. So also there is a universal declaration about men. It is unknown that brings kind of repetitions that particular behavior. And like Cicero said in Rome, the people who do not know his history, they had a risk to repeat it again, and we will have another Holocaust that it might be different or the same from the people of Moses. Now, in the religious France, in the France that actually talked about the human rights, it echoes of Michel Foucault, a philosopher, who said that education and justice and religion, they were structures of power. And the reasoning were just the humankind. To prohibit that, it made an echo in that that used to be the spirit. And in Europe, now, and unfortunately, it is a repetition of the same behaviors in Europe. They come to here, to Latin America, except for Mexico and Honduras. We could say that for today, See, it's for today, the human being is trying to obtain that conviction and that the public may be another type of being. Like if that particular human being could take off the spirit and put it in a closet and leave it there, locked, and then the natural and rational man in a scientific way to come out in a material way to exercise his public life. In contrast to that, they are attacking the spirit because of the body, the judicial body, in order to exercise his right. Every particular body in the creation has a spirit, and that particular spirit, it makes the right to exercise the freedom of religion. That is what allows men to be a solitary man. So, and the philosopher recognizes that Dr. Ordóñez Alemán Habermendice, you should not deny the right to the believers to participate in the decisions, the political decision, and also not even to tell them not to bring all those good things to the discussion when it comes to legalize abortion or any other affairs when it comes to reproduction, to medicine, and to control the climate. That cannot be denied to the believers. The believer, either if it's Islamic, Christian, in any denominations, they cannot be denied of the opportunity to be an activist within their decisions in their countries. They cannot do it today or tomorrow. Also, the United Nations within this particular context or within the American context, they cannot let go the necessity of something against or maybe in favor the differences within the religions. That was the reason that I wanted to come and share with you. I wish I could say I'm going to follow with my bosses, but I won't say more. But I wanted to participate and let them know your thought. Thank you very much.
We thank all the presenters very much. Our time is up, but we are going to have some questions, but please be very timely. Yes, go ahead. A few questions. This is for Dr. Jose Ricardo from Mexico. Doctor, in your excellent presentation, in the second to last slide, there is some language that I perhaps misinterpreted, but talked about proselyting. In the legal reform, there's language that leaves the impression that it is prohibited to proselyte under the new law. Perhaps I misunderstood it. Well, just to make it a little more clear, perhaps if we can read the text and then answer the question, how was the text when it was published in the and in the Constitution? Everyone is entitled to their own ethical convictions. If it's about ethical convictions, I have no doubts, because that's a concept that in the political negotiations that we have today, something I wanted to make clear, but having a religion and being for or against it, this freedom includes the right to participate individually or collectively, both in public and in private, in the ceremonies, devotions, or their various types of worship, and that's part of international treaties and the reform. In other words, that's what we wanted to be in the Constitution. insofar as it does not constitute a crime or a violation of the law. No one shall use public acts of expression of said freedom for political purposes of proselyting or for political propaganda. Is that the part? Yes. Well, in Mexico, and probably like also in other countries in Latin America, our electoral laws are overregulated that try to resolve not only electoral competition, but also all the phases of the electoral process. So this was also done by the 20 representatives of the PRD, which, according to their votes, included more text than we did. But it's about the exercise of the freedom of religion, individually and collectively. So that's the basic spirit behind it. And so it's basically a preventative measure, so that if the ceremonies of religious freedom become known in public and are expressed in the media, as long as they are not used for political propaganda in favor of any particular candidate or against a political party. And so this is a limitation to prevent mixing religious freedom with the electoral process in Mexico. Thank you very much. And so I think this is something we're going to talk more about during the dinner, but another question from somebody else. Thank you. Anybody else? Yes.
My only question is like we say in Mexico, it's just a thought. And in Spanish, it's a positive thought. It's more like a recognition. Alejandro, well, I'm very grateful for the thoughts that you share with us. Well, it pretty much emphasizes when you talk that for us, ideally, it could be a deputy of justice. And effectively, we are in agreement with all the judges that we had in the past session, that they mentioned something like their values that they need to have in, but they cannot put them on their closets and they can just hang them. If I understood it right. But defining just the way that you are a public server, that you walk the walk, and then this is the way it should be, that they should be able to help lead and direct their own governance, and that they may come and make emphasis when it comes to the public decision in the government, and also things that we have in common, that we should defend the law and the spirit of the law, it could be recognized. Thank you.
Gracias. Otro ceguayazo.
Another question. Yes, go ahead.
Don Alejandro, mi nombre es Jader, soy de Brasil.
I'm from Brazil. I don't know if I understood the end of your talk very well, but based on what I understood, you, as a judge that you once were, if you don't find a law to be just, then you shouldn't use it. Was that what I understood? I'm going to complement it with just one phrase. Whether if in your country the Senate approves equal marriage, regardless of my convictions, you as a judge will not apply that? In my country, there is an article, the 19th article of the Constitution, which says that it protects the freedom of conscience, and it all establishes, so it says that no person shall be molested on the basis of his or her convictions and shall not be obligated to act against his or her conscience. And public official, government officials also have a conscience, and so that cannot be done, not even on basis of a legal provision, including even constitutional provisions. And so there's no problem as far as rebelliousness against the legal system. If it's within the legal system, then the conscience of the government official is protected. It's not a matter of our saying that we would be in face of normative political anarchy, but simply that the legal system legally protects, because there are two duties, the duties of the government official faced with a legal decision, legal or judicial decision, which is related, and so, and with his duty as a person of conscience. And this link of powers protects the government official so he can act in accordance with his conscience. Now, what does this mean? That there may be another government official who may carry out his function in public, but otherwise, it would be a totalitarian state if people were forced to act against their own conscience. But someone. But here it is, and this is where a duty is being fulfilled, the positive legal duty or the conscience duty, of course. But my criticism of the judges and the plenary session is that what they're saying is, if you have a problem of a conscience, then you should not be a judge anymore. Well, I was on the Supreme Court, on the Council of State. I was in the on the Supreme Court of the Council of State, and this just doesn't make sense. That's a very sensitive subject. Yes, of course, in the eyes of the naturalist, if a right or a law is not fair, then it's not a law, then it'll just be something arbitrary. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think we are going to have many, many questions and comments after this, but right now we are going to be done with the last question. I hope I don't lie, because the moderator asked me if it was related with what we spoke about, and I told him yes, but I don't think that this is how it went down. But I just want to make a comment on this. I think that it's very important that in our governments, in all of the governments in our region, that they may be sincere with all those communities of different faith, that they might have different positions, what is called right to be reproductive in the sexual area and right to the other area. 2 months ago or 3 months ago, we have the first meeting in Latin America and a Caribbean in Montevideo. It was established by one of the countries, and it was regarding to the development in Montevideo. And when I was there, all the governments in the region, absolutely all the governments, they signed a document. For one end, it actually greets the countries that they have adopted laws of abortion and invites all the other countries that they don't have that particular law, that they may modify their legislature and or they may revise them in order to approve this. So now, I don't know if this is a question, because I don't know who will be the person that may respond to this question. So we don't have people from the health department or from the executive powers from these particular regions. But this is something that we can agree on, and only if you enter 5 minutes to the web and if you see this consensus of Montevideo. And why? Because, you know, it's been taken by a lot of the countries from the region in Latin America and the Caribbean, because that's what the agreement that we had in our countries.
Gracias.
Thank you.
Moises, that was a big concern that I had, because this was also mentioned at the Cairo conference and also in the disagreements of the millennium and all the conferences and summits on worldwide population. But in the Geneva Convention, these signatures do not obligate to and have no legal power within the states, because it is part of what is, and these are declarations and international treaties. Yeah, so it does not obligate any government. Yeah, it's always the government. That is, well, thank you very much for an extraordinary session. Thank you, everyone.